Welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's radio show, AC23. The mission of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge is to foster the creative capacity in the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, teaching, and training. Over the next 23 minutes, you'll hear from staff members, artists, and arts organizations throughout our region. If you'd like to hear this episode again, you can find it online at www.artsbr.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Doug Stone, my good friend Doug Stone.
Hi, Mike.
Pleasure to have you here, Doug.
It's great to be here. It's always great to be with you.
I've known Doug, well, how long now?
5 years I've been here.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
5 years. And I think, am I right in thinking that we first met at McKinley High?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, listeners, a very special guest today, Doug Stone, who is, you're originally from Illinois.
Peoria, Illinois.
And so you've been down here, what is it, 5 years now?
Yeah, okay. I'm going into my sixth year at LSU.
So, and what is your official title over there?
Well, let's see, what's the date? In 5 or maybe 7 days, I will officially be Associate Professor of Jazz Studies at LSU. Making my way through academia.
Well, wonderful. We need academia needs more people like Doug Stone. With all seriousness, I think it's wonderful that you're down here. When I found out you had gotten the job and your name had been mentioned, I was like, well, I can't wait to meet this guy because I know he's, I'm sure he's going to be killing. And absolutely, that was true. In that time, these past 5 years, we've had a chance to do different things together. I think as teaching,
right,
as well as playing gigs.
Yeah.
And
I have to say that you're one of the people who I've really appreciated in all the help you've given me to kind of become a part of the scene in this area. Mm-hmm. And I have had the opportunity to move around a little bit in my life and try to kind of make things happen in my professional career in different places. And I started out in Central Illinois as a high school kid, and there was a very good, nurturing musical climate there for young people. I'm not the only person who actually came out of my town who's, successful and making a living in the music world. And then after I finished my undergrad, I moved to Chicago, and that was kind of a big adjustment to try to figure out as a fairly young person how to make things happen there. And you have your connections from school, but you're always trying to meet new people and make your way.
Now, how old were you when you moved to Chicago?
I would have been 22, 23.
Yeah.
And just as, my life there was going pretty well, but I decided it was time to get a master's degree. So then, kind of a third time moving into a new place, and I moved to Rochester, New York to work on a master's degree there. And
at the famous Eastman School of Music.
Yeah. And, as a student, as a professional there, you have to kind of make your way in. You got to meet people and play. And so by the time I got the job here at LSU, I would say that one of the kind of one of the challenges or one of the things that you can kind of be concerned about when you make a move like that is, am I going to be able to do this again? Am I going to be able to fit into a new musical environment and culture? And so within the first semester there that I was here in 2018, you know, I was trying to reach out to people in town. And so I think someone had maybe recommended you in terms of the teaching that you were doing. And I mean, just after that first meeting, you kind of let me know about the Genos thing on Thursday nights once right. a month. And, you know, it was really just so amazing to have folks like you and Bobby Campo and many others who have helped me to kind of get established and comfortable musically in this right. area.
Right.
And there's so many great musicians in Baton Rouge, and of course, you know, that also involves things in New Orleans and, you know, other parts of the state as well. So,
right.
so you know, I just want to kind of thank you and really give you that appreciation for the help you've given me to develop maybe one of my, of the places I've lived, I'm probably having the most musical fun here.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. And what I'll tell you, when what I admired very early on when I first met you and just kind of either would see you personally or just hear about you, you know, in the area, is the you're very proactive MO, if you will, of just being involved in the community. Because quite frankly, you know, I've noticed that in academia and, you know, different institutions, what have you, that sometimes the music teachers in those environments don't necessarily reach out that much outside of that,
yeah.
you know, the castle, if you will.
Right.
But right off the bat, you hit the ground running, and you yeah. were playing with everybody, which is, and I think, and especially in a community, maybe it's the South, I don't know, but you've been to a lot of musical communities. I think if musicians see someone who's number one skilled, but number two, just very willing to get involved, and number three, just personable, just a nice person, you're generally welcomed with open arms.
Yeah. Well, I think I have always been inspired by models, you know, of educator musicians who have focused on that kind of community. Well, I guess two things. So I've been inspired by guys who have done those kind of things. So in my undergrad at Northern Illinois University, Ronald Carter, who's a saxophone player and a great teacher, he directed a band on the south side of Chicago. I can't quite remember the name of that organization, but it was a weekly, you know, like a weekly high school honor band type mm-hmm. situation. And he did a lot of great recruitment for NIU from there. And in Rochester, I only had one opportunity to meet Fred Sturm, who is a great arranger and teacher yeah. and musician.
He wrote a great book.
Yeah. yeah. And he taught at Eastman for a long time. And somewhere along the line, well, Fred was involved in two things that I heard about somewhere along the line. One was that he directed an adult community band in Honeoy Falls, New York, which is kind of a suburban part of the Rochester area. And you definitely don't hear about very many people teaching at an institution, kind of the level of the conservatory, like the Eastman School, being willing to go out in the community and play with, you know, work with Weekend Warrior type,
right,
you know,
right.
musicians. And he also was involved in a camp for adult students, a jazz camp for adult students called the Tritone Camp, which Fred has since passed away, but the camp is still going. I actually just had a couple of Zoom lessons today with two guys who I met at that camp many years ago. But I think that has always inspired me, you know. I was really involved a lot in community education in Rochester as well, but I guess I've always kind of, I just enjoy being out there playing, and I really don't care the level of musicians I'm playing with. When somebody calls, I like to do it, and I like, you know, maybe it's not always the highest level musical situation. Maybe you're not going to be playing at Carnegie Hall anytime soon with a band, but I like playing music. I like, there's just a physical thing about, you know, playing your horn and and being on top of, trying to be on top of your game as much as you can as a musician, and you got to be playing to do that. And I just like the hang. And I think our session over the last few days in New Orleans with all those great guys, maybe you might have put together the best saxophone section I've ever been part of.
Well,
with me as the weak link.
No, right? No, there were no weak links.
But,
and if you were the weak link, why did I give you all the solos?
Okay, I'm blushing. But just the hang of that. I mean, we had a little 3-day session, and that will go down in the record books of some of my favorite hanging ever.
I'm glad, yeah.
And if you're not out there doing it, if you're not out in the community meeting people, you know, and of course that's a very high professional level situation, but I feel the same thing on any type of gig. And, you know, this being kind of a Baton Rouge focused thing, I mean, I have been really fortunate to play with some people who are very special to me here in Baton Rouge that maybe, you know, they didn't have the opportunity to go to Eastman School. Maybe they didn't even play their instrument their entire life and got into it later in life or took some years off, you know. But I tell those guys a lot of times that sometimes I have more fun listening to my students or my friends who are trying to get some things under their fingers, and you hear that growth. If I go listen to my favorite Joe Henderson record, I know what he's going to play. I got excited at one point listening to that, but maybe in a day, if I'm working with a student who plays, who makes some progress as a musician, the excitement that I felt hearing their solo is a little bit more than hearing my Joe Henderson record,
right?
Because you know them, you see the process, you're there to make that experience happen.
Yeah, and
you're
very vested in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, talking about, you know, playing with different level musicians, and maybe not even so much different level, but just a different pedigree musician, where, like, we played a job the other night where it was you and I with, you know, you could say half the band were educated musicians, and then the other half, they were also
exactly.
educated, but from a different, you know, a pedigree, a different ilk, and but wonderful musicians.
Yeah.
And I've always loved playing with musicians who have come at it from a different angle, and you end up learning something in those situations, you know.
I probably play an equal number of swamp pop gigs to jazz gigs, you know, in a given year. And which, you know, that's a style of music that you wouldn't even know what that meant.
You're not going to study that at Eastman School of Music.
Yeah.
Right.
And one of the bands I play with, I mean, there was a point where at least half of the guys worked in a plant. That was their full-time job, you know. There's a guy who's a turtle farmer.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the piano player and singer, the turtle farmer guy, Lyndon, is playing Desperado, there's so much emotion. I mean, he plays the same song every time we play a gig, but there's so much emotion and joy and beauty in that, you know. And sometimes guys like that will even apologize, you know, oh, we're not like you, we don't have that kind of experience. And I would rather many times hang with those guys, you know, because they play what they play with such a deep commitment. That's what they study. That's what they listen to. They're going to play those songs every weekend, but they're going to play them like it's the first time every weekend. And I love that.
That's an interesting subject, too, because maybe sometimes you could argue that a musician like what you're talking about, maybe knowing more and being more educated would almost make it worse. Or not worse, but it would take away the certain approach that they're taking to that music, and it would become, quote, too sophisticated or whatever. You know, it wouldn't be what it was.
I completely agree, and I think sometimes I think about the way that us as, you know, quote unquote jazz musicians operate, we forget the garage band mentality. And when you play in a garage band with your high school friends, you're going to learn that one. You might play that one song for 6 months, you
right.
know,
right.
and you're going to know that in a different way than when we maybe just go into a session, read the stuff down. You can have the effect with the music if you've studied enough and if you worked hard enough and you have a diverse background of styles that you can make it sound. I mean, we've both done plenty of sessions where you can make it sound like you've been playing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
But the feeling that you get when you have been playing it for years with the same people
right.
is a completely different experience. And I'm sure that listeners feel that. I've been involved in several recording projects where you do a tour for a week before you do the recording. And those recordings have a much different feel
mm-hmm.
than ones where you're like, let me see if I can get the best musicians I know, pay them a bunch of money, and have them do this thing one time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Both are good. Both can be good.
Mm-hmm.
But where you have kind of the deeper connection is going to be that when you have that experience together.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, when you have those experiences, I think when you come back to, you know, the area that you're most comfortable with, let's say it's jazz in this case, it does bring something different when you come back to that music.
Oh, of course.
You know? And I always, quite frankly, on this subject, I've always loved listening to jazz musicians who bring those elements into their jazz. You know, the R&B guys who play jazz. You
right.
know, there's a different thing there.
Yeah.
Well, so what are you up to? Like, what's happening right now? It's, at LSU, what's going on? What you doing?
So, getting ready for the fall semester.
Mm-hmm.
This will be my second full year directing the jazz ensemble. And that has been a great experience, learning experience for me. I never... Of all the things that I've done in the education world, from teaching middle school general music to teaching at LSU, I think that directing the top jazz ensemble at a major university like LSU is
mm-hmm.
probably something that would be the least the least on my radar. So it's been fun and a learning experience to, you know, kind of begin to develop an idea of how to approach doing a group like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you get to that level, what are some of the main things you're talking about? Is it a lot of conceptual things, still improvisational things, or?
I think that even thinking about that is one of the interesting challenges of
mm-hmm.
that. I think that at every institution I've been involved in, the bands do different things, are known for doing different things, and probably need different approaches. I don't think that if you were... You know, if I had done this at other universities, or if we moved some of my favorite or well-known college jazz ensemble directors to different schools,
mm-hmm.
that they would necessarily be able to do the exact same thing in the different places.
Right.
So I think that there would be potentially opportunities to approach a band like that with an educational mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think by that point, it's important to provide what a real world experience in this music would require.
Sure.
And so I've actually been thinking about kind of what are my main goals and objectives in the upcoming school year, and even thinking about what we did on our big band session last week. I mean, it's kind of interesting that we had that because that stuff has been on my mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that situation that we had, you have the best players that you can, that money can buy, mm-hmm. reading this music down and putting this stuff together, and that's what students need to be prepared for.
Right.
And so I really have been thinking in terms of goals and objectives this year as how can we polish music up to a level where it would be something that you hear on a record and you're proud of. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we were trying to do over last week. You know, this,
sure.
What are the details of, you know, first of all, getting the notes and the rhythms. Mm-hmm. And then how are we going to articulate this? Where's our intonation going to sit?
Right.
How do we handle these rhythms as an ensemble? You know, there was one part in one of the charts we did where the brass had these quarter note triplets leading up to the saxes playing a downbeat. Yeah. And I noticed myself on the first couple of passes, I wasn't aware of what was going on in the brass. And once I heard those quarter note triplets, I was like, oh man, we need to be responding to where those quarter note triplets land. That's where we need to land our
right.
note.
Right.
And I think that translating what we do, I have a hard time translating what I learn and know and think about when I'm playing in a section into the teaching context. Mm-hmm. So I have a former teacher, Ray Ricker, who mm-hmm. was saxophone teacher, clarinet teacher at the Eastman School for a long time. But at the last part of his career, he ran this institute at Eastman called the Institute for Music Leadership and the Arts Leadership Program. And Ray wrote a book called Lessons from a Streetwise Professor. Now, Ray was the main contractor in Rochester, New York. So if a Broadway musical came in...
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in. And if you want to hear this episode again, you can find it on our website, artsbr.org, and click on AC23. We'll see you next time.